Thank you so much. I like that arrangement, Jerry. Thank you for that. And let me also thank you again for the most awesome birthday party ever. Wednesday night was great. The food was wonderful. The cake, the candles on the cake. We even had, Kay Holt had the fire department standing by. Had a fire fire truck out here in case the candles got away. But luckily, there were only two candles on the cake, a 2 and an 8. I'll put them in any order I want to since it's my birthday. But just thank you so much. What a wonderful day. What a wonderful evening. Thank you. I'm reading from James's letter to the church, chapter 4, beginning with verse 13. Listen up, James tells us. You who say today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Kobe Bryant has died. That was the news that shocked the world last Sunday. And everywhere, people reacted in stunned disbelief. Not Kobe Bryant, basketball icon, NBA legend, 5-time national champion, 2-time Olympic gold medalist. That can't be true. But it was. Kobe Bryant, at the age of 41, along with his daughter, Gianna, age 13, and 7 others, were killed when their helicopter crashed in the hills outside Calabasas, California. And following the news of his death, grown men huddled in groups outside the arena where Kobe played and wept openly. Tributes of praise and expressions of grief came pouring in from around the globe, especially from sports figures. LeBron James said, "I'm heartbroken and devastated." Michael Jordan stated, "Words cannot describe the pain I'm feeling. I loved Kobe. He was a little brother to me." One news reporter who had never met Kobe Bryant said, "It feels like a death in the family." Another said that Kobe's passion was his family and basketball. And Alicia Keys at the Grammy Awards last Sunday night said, "We're feeling a crazy sadness right now. We're standing here heartbroken." She then went on to say, "America and the whole wide world lost a hero." Now, I must say that as a basketball player, Kobe Bryant deserves all of the accolades he has received. But Kobe Bryant is not a hero. A hero is not someone who dribbles a basketball and scores 60 or 80 points in a single game. And a hero is not someone who, well, let me read you this piece from USA Today, dated Monday, January 27th, by Nancy Armour. That Kobe Bryant was a transcendent player, one of the best to ever play the game of basketball, is without question. So too that he inspired hundreds of thousands of kids to reach beyond themselves, be it on the basketball court or in the last few years of his life, the creative arts. But contrary to almost universal praise and adoration being lavished upon him Sunday following his death in a helicopter crash, Bryant was not perfect. Like all of us, he was flawed and made mistakes. One in particular that cannot be ignored when considering his legacy. In 2003, Bryant was charged with sexual assault and false imprisonment. He did not admit guilt, but his statement when the case was dropped was a stunning admission of culpability. And he later settled a lawsuit with the woman. I recognize now that she did not and does not view this incident the same way as I did, said Bryant. After months of reviewing discovery, listening to her attorney, and even her testimony in person, I now understand how she feels and that she did not consent to this encounter. Now, I'm not trying to trash the legacy of Kobe Bryant. But as Nancy Armour wrote, that's part of his legacy. And it cannot be ignored. And I would add to that, and that's no hero. A hero is someone who will sacrifice himself, herself, for the sake of another. Those who rushed into the Twin Towers on 9/11 are heroes. Those who entered a compound in Pakistan and hunted down the mastermind between 9/11 are heroes. The defenders of Benghazi are heroes. Those who have given and are giving their lives in the service of their country are heroes. And a hero is one who knelt in a garden on a dark, dark night, praying so intently that drops of blood fell from his forehead. Facing a horrible death on the cross, he said, "Nevertheless, I'll go. Your will be done." He endured the cross and scorned its shame. He humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. That's a hero. And I would add one more definition to the word hero. A hero is someone who can face the worst that life can send their way, who stays the course, and he refuses to give way to despair and hopelessness and defeat. And you will find them in every community and in every church. One day at the gym, a few of us were talking football. And someone mentioned a former NFL player who had died at a young age from ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And I replied as they told the story, "That's tough. That's really tough." Standing a few feet away, listening to the conversation, was a man named Willie. Willie, I guess, is in his mid to late 50s. Willie walked over and he said, "You think that's tough? Tough is having a police officer ring your doorbell at 3 o'clock in the morning and tell you that your son has been shot and killed. That's tough." Willie walked away. I went over to Willie and I said, "Willie, I'm sorry, I didn't know that." Willie went on to tell me as we talked that when his son died, they couldn't stay in their house in Durham. Just couldn't live there any longer. And so they moved over near Clayton. Told me his wife has never been the same since their son died. They're getting by. They have a support group called Parents of Murdered Children. I didn't know there was such a group. Willie told me he had his faith. Willie's faced one of the greatest tragedies that a parent can face, but he hasn't given up. He's hoping and praying for his wife that she'll get better. And he has his faith in God. And because he does, Willie's holding on to God, and I think God is holding on to Willie. In my book, Willie's a hero. But I said, as I said earlier, with all of the accolades he has received that are well deserved, Kobe Bryant's not a hero. But what can we learn from the death of Kobe Bryant? I would suggest to you, first of all, we can learn that sooner or later, death will show up. Did you hear that? I'm not trying to be morbid. I'm simply stating a fact that sometime sooner, sometime later, but one of these days, death is going to knock on your door or my door. In William Shakespeare's comedy, As You Like It, one of the characters states, "All the world's a stage and all men and women merely players." And then he says they have their exits and their entrances. Life is like a play unfolding on a stage. And in the wings, death stands waiting. Emily Dickinson stated it this way, "Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held just ourselves and immortality." Isn't that what James was telling us? What is your life? You're like a mist that appears for a little while, and then in a blink, it vanishes away. Andrew Carter is not a preacher. He could be, I think. He's a reporter, a sports reporter for the News and Observer. Here's what he wrote in his column on Wednesday of this past week. "For young basketball players, for people who grew up idolizing Bryant because of his wizardry on the court, his death is especially cruel. It is more than the loss of an idol, but also the loss of a myth of invincibility. It is a reminder for the youngest and the strongest that life indeed ends, and it can end anytime. Sooner or later, death shows up. And secondly, we can learn that death will almost always show up at the most inconvenient time. In our scripture lesson this morning, James was addressing those who had some really big plans for the future. They were going to expand their business. They were going to acquire more and more wealth when suddenly death pays a visit. That was true for Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna and the seven other people on board that helicopter. They were on their way to a girls' basketball game. They no doubt were excited about that, and perhaps they were even laughing and joking, enjoying the moment, when suddenly death shows up. And that may well be true for you, for me. Death may come for us at the most inconvenient time. When we're making plans for the future, maybe a graduation, a wedding, the birth of a child or a grandchild, a new house, a vacation, a promotion, retirement. Suddenly, death stops by, and we've run out of time. Because that is true, I want to suggest to you this morning that we need to be ready for death whenever it comes for any one of us. How do we do that? Well, we need to be ready by receiving every day as a gift from God and living that day as fully as we possibly can. This is the day that the Lord has made, and we need to be glad and rejoice in it. Yes, make your plans for tomorrow. We cannot accomplish much without that. But let us not be so focused on those plans. And let us not be so much worried about tomorrow that we miss the wonder and the joy and the specialness of the day at hand. And I believe I'm talking here this morning to a lot of people who just rush through your days. Robert Hastings wrote something, it's familiar to you, but we ought to read it and remind ourselves every day to focus on the important things. Tucked away in our subconscious is an idyllic vision. We see ourselves on a long trip that spans the continent. We are traveling by train. Out the windows, we drink in the passing scene of cars on nearby highways, of children waving at a crossing, of cattle grazing on a distant hillside, of smoke pouring from a power plant, or row upon row of corn and wheat, of flatlands and valleys, of mountains and rolling hillsides, of city skylines and village halls. But uppermost in our mind is the final destination. On a certain day, at a certain hour, we will pull into the station. Bands will be playing and flags waving. Once we get there, so many wonderful dreams will come true, and the pieces of our lives will fit together like a completed jigsaw puzzle. How restlessly we pace the aisles, damning the minutes for loitering, waiting for the station. When we reach the station, that will be it, we cry. When I'm 18, when I buy a new Mercedes Benz, when I put the last kid through college, when we have paid off the mortgage, when I get a promotion, when I reach the age of retirement, I shall live happily ever after. Sooner or later, we must realize there is no station, no place to arrive at once and for all. The true joy of life is the trip. The station is only a dream. It constantly outdistances us. Relish the moment is a good motto, especially when coupled with Psalm 118:24. This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. It isn't the burdens of today that drive men mad. It is regrets over yesterday and fear of tomorrow. Regret and fear are the twin thieves who rob us of today. So stop pacing the aisles and counting the miles. Instead, climb more mountains, eat more ice cream, go barefoot more often, swim more rivers, watch more sunsets, laugh more, cry less. And then take a chance and tell someone you love them. Life must be lived as we go along. The station will come soon enough. And I submit to you that we can be ready by leaving behind a legacy of love in the lives of others. The hurting, the sorrowful, the broken, the least of these that Jesus talked about. Someone wrote, "Do you know the world is dying for a little bit of love?" Everywhere we hear the sighing for a little bit of love, for the love that rights a wrong, fills the heart with hope and song. They have waited oh so long for a little bit of love. From the poor of every city, hands are reaching out in pity. Some have burdens hard to bear. Some have sorrows we should share. Shall they falter or despair for a little bit of love? And we need to be ready. Ready by leaving behind a legacy of love in the lives of those whom we love. As I said a few weeks ago, be what you intend to be. Say what you intend to say to those you love while you have the time. On her show last Monday, Ellen DeGeneres reminded her audience that life is short and fragile. She went on to say, we don't have to have birthdays to celebrate. Just celebrate life. If you haven't told someone you love them, do it now. Tell them you love them, call your friends, text your friends, hug them, kiss them. Carol Kuykendall has a devotional based on Paul's words to the church to redeem the time, make the most of the time that you have. And then she said that life is made up of irretrievable moments. Moments of time that will never happen in the same way again. Did you hear that? Life is made up of irretrievable moments. Moments of time that will never happen in the same way again. That makes every moment special. Every encounter, every relationship special. And then Karen Kuykendall had this prayer, Lord, help me recognize and savor life's irretrievable moments today and every day. I wonder what would happen if you and I made that our prayer and acted upon it. One thing more, we need to be ready. And we can be ready whenever death comes calling by making Jesus Christ the Savior and Lord of your life. In his letter to the Romans, Paul declared, "Everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved. No exceptions. No matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter how long you wandered away from God, everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved." And John tells us in his letter to the church, whoever has the Son has life. And whoever does not have the Son does not have life. Eric Ritz tells the story of a wealthy man who found great joy in collecting fine art from all over the world. And the man had a son, and the son also grew to enjoy great art, and the father and son spent many wonderful hours and many wonderful years together collecting famous paintings from everywhere to put in their mansion. But one day war broke out in their country, and the son went off to fight. A few weeks before Christmas, the young man was reported missing in action. The old man was filled with anxiety as he waited for news about his son. And then it came only days before Christmas. The news arrived that the art collector's son was dead. His son had died a hero. He had been trying to help a fallen comrade when he himself had been shot. The old man didn't think he could survive his grief. He loved his son more than life itself. He couldn't bring himself to celebrate Christmas. He barely felt alive. But a knock on the door roused him from his grief. The young soldier in the doorway introduced himself as the one whose life had been saved by the old man's son. He had come to express his appreciation and to give the old man a gift. The soldier explained that he too was an artist, that he had painted a picture of the man's son, and the father was amazed by the lifelike quality of the painting. He hung it on the mantle in his study, and it brought him a great deal of comfort. In fact, it became his most prized work of art. The years passed and the father died. And when he died, art collectors from around the world were excited to learn about that because it meant that this collection would be up for sale. And the day of the auction came and people crowded into the mansion eagerly, wanting and waiting to bid. How disappointed they were when they realized that per the old man's will, the picture of his son would be the first piece auctioned off. The other art collectors called out impatiently that they had come there to bid on real art, not some sentimental piece. No one at first would bid on the picture of the man's son. But finally, a friend of the family who had known the young man for years, almost since his birth, who knew how much that painting meant to the father, bid $10. And the bid was accepted. And finally, the others would get to bid for the really important stuff. But the auctioneer put away his gavel and announced that the bidding was closed, and the other collectors were furious. Was he crazy? All that was sold that day, they said, was a worthless piece of art of the old man's son. What about the rest of it? And the auctioneer pulled out a draft of the old man's will and said, it's very clear. According to the will of the Father, whoever takes the Son gets it all. When you have the Son, you have it all. When you have the Son, you have everything you need for time and eternity. Do you have Him? Do you know Him? For you see, someday the news of your death, the news of my death, will shock our world, the world we live in, the people we know. And when that day comes, I want to be ready. Don't you? Don't you? The hymn is 317, Only Trust Him. Only trust Him. I invite you to come. Come and accept Christ. Come and unite with His church by letter, by statement, by baptism. Come and recommit your life to Him as we stand and as we sing.